You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the March-April edition of Colorado Outdoors, read by Philip Bradbury. This is being recorded the evening of April 20th. Today, you'll hear about the asteroid that took out the dinosaurs and left its mark in a Colorado state park. Expect the unexpected, what to see and what to look out for when visiting Colorado state parks, and the cattail crooner, marsh wrens, a curious little bird, and if there's time, grasshopper mice, certainly not your house mouse. So let's get started. The day the asteroid changed the world and left its mark in a Colorado state park, this article by Mary Taylor Young. It was an ordinary day about 65 million years ago. The sun was shining somewhere. The dinosaurs were grazing or resting or tearing each other apart with mighty jaws. But hurtling towards them was a massive asteroid. It would soon crash into Earth with devastating consequences that would change life on Earth forever. What does all this have to do with Colorado in the 21st century? One of the rare spots in the world to see evidence of that asteroid impact made so many millions of years ago lies in plain view in Trinidad Lake State Park. The end of the dinos. 65 million years ago, in the late Cretaceous period, astounding life forms roamed this land that is now Colorado. Dinosaurs were the dominant animals on Earth, and they had been here for more than 160 million years. They were incredibly diverse in size, shape, appearance, and role in the ecosystem, ranging from massive carnivorous T-Rexes and plant-eating brachiosaurs to bird-like dinosaurs the size of a hummingbird. Most mammals were smaller than a rabbit. In the late Cretaceous, Earth's climate and ecosystem were relatively stable and likely would have gone on that way until something dropped from space. A massive asteroid smashed into the Earth off the coast of today's Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. Prevailing scientific theory credits this event with ending the age of reptiles. The asteroid was 6 miles across and traveling at 47,000 miles per hour, so fast and so enormous that its impact bashed a crater 20 miles deep and 100 miles wide. Debris and vapor from the impact vulcanized into the atmosphere, sending up thousands of cubic miles worth of dirt, rock, vapor, and debris, enough to fill the Grand Canyon maybe two times over or more. The impact triggered a cascade of immediately destructive effects across the globe: tsunamis, earthquakes, massive firestorms, and windstorms. Countless animals and plants died in the days and months after the impact, but it's what happened next that led to the extinction of more than 75% of life on Earth. The massive amount of debris in the atmosphere created a dark cloud of particles that dispersed around the globe, hanging in the atmosphere for years. Light and heat from the sun couldn't penetrate this dark layer, leaving Earth pitch black and very cold. The world descended into an impact winter. Without sunlight, green plants couldn't photosynthesize and died. Animals that ate the green plants followed, and then those that ate the plant eaters. Entire ecosystems collapsed. The debris eventually settled, but carbon dioxide, CO2, remained in the atmosphere, leading to a greenhouse effect like what is warming the Earth today. From cold and dark, Earth became an oven. The global wipeout of plants and animals triggered by the asteroid is known as the fifth extinction in Earth's history, and it spelled the end of the non-avian dinosaurs. The mark in the park. I'm walking a trail in the wildlife viewing area of Trinidad Lake State Park. Red-winged blackbirds call from the willows along Long Creek. Bearscat and the heart-shaped tracks of mule deer decorate the dirt path, but it is not wildlife that I'm looking for today. I'm scouting for the mark of an ancient catechism from 65 million years ago, the evidence from the asteroid impact that is hidden in the cliff. The asteroid didn't directly hit anywhere near here, but it left its fingerprint in a layer of rock, a geologic stratum. It's called the K-PG boundary, referred to on older maps and publications as the KT boundary. And through the geologic layer formed throughout the globe millions of years ago, it is visible only in a few places on the planet, and one of them is here. Interjecting a side note here, there's also one at Red Rocks Park. Most of us would likely never notice this subtle layer, or if we did, it wouldn't seem important. This cliff is like countless others, an exposed slice of geology rising about 70 feet above the trail, grass and sagebrush sprouting up in spotty clumps with a steep cascade of coal debris and soil below the rock face. At its top, a deep layer of sandstone cap rock, perhaps 5 feet thick, overhangs a foot-high coal layer like a brooding lip. But it is the narrow white line sandwiched between the coal and the sandstone that I've come to see. This unremarkable white line marks a monumental change in Earth's history, the end of the non-avian dinosaurs. This is the K-PG boundary. The K-PG boundary formed from debris that built up around the world after the particles thrown into the atmosphere by the asteroid impact settled back to Earth. Over millions of years, the fallout compressed into a 1-inch layer of claystone rock. Locked in that layer are rare elements and minerals that give geologists clues to what happened. The layer contains iridium, an element found in asteroids and meteors but rarely on Earth except at impact sites. The boundary also contains shocked quartz, which results when ordinary quartz rock is deformed by a massive pressure shock. Shocked quartz is commonly found in meteor impact craters. The boundary also has glassy microketites, which are glass beads that form when all the vaporized rock from an impact cools and settles. Just think of molten rock whirling into spheres and then cooling into glassy marbles. There are other clues. Pollen from flowering plants is missing from the boundary, implying that there were no longer any flowering plants. But there is evidence of fern spores, which first recolonized the barren Earth after the mass extinction. Pollen shows up again in higher layers as flowering plants slowly recovered. The coal seam below the boundary is derived from the organic carbon-based life plants and animals that lived at the end of the Cretaceous. Also below the boundary are abundant dinosaur fossils. Above it, none. The discovery and deciphering of the asteroid impact, the extinction, and the K-PG boundary was a complicated case of scientific sleuthing. Readers who want to dive into this fascinating story can check out T-Rex and the Crater of Doom by Dr. Walter Alvarez, the University of California, Berkeley geology professor who spearheaded the effort, including discovery of the Chicxulub impact crater off the coast of the Yucatan. Visiting the boundary. The K-PG boundary is visible in the Long's Canyon Watchable Wildlife Area portion of Trinidad Lake State Park. To get there, travel west on Highway 12 from the town of Trinidad for 8.5 miles, past the park's east entrance and the town of Cokedale to County Road 18.3. Cross the Purgatory River and follow the county road for 3 miles to a T and a brown sign indicating the wildlife viewing area to the left. The access road is temporarily closed to vehicles because of a washout, so park here and walk into the entry pay station about a quarter mile. This is a fee area and requires an annual or day park pass to enter. Beyond the creek, you'll notice the remnant adobe buildings of the village of El Rito. This is private property, so the site and its structures are strictly off limits and not part of the state park. Former El Rito residents and their families still live in the Trinidad area and visit the village occasionally to work on restoring the buildings. From the pay station, follow the road 3/4 of a mile to where a low interpretive sign is posted below the cliff on your left. The sign is severely sun damaged, but it is still an interesting read. The fanciful illustration of a T-Rex watching a flaming asteroid strike the Earth is from the cover of T-Rex and the Crater of Doom. The park prefers that visitors not scramble up the steep, loose debris pile to the boundary, both for safety and preservation of the rock. But if, like this author, you can't resist, be sure to just look and don't collect. The boundary has been here for millions of years, and we can all help ensure that it lasts for many more. The KPG boundary site within Trinidad Lake State Park is pretty special, so noteworthy that it is also designated state natural area. The Colorado Natural Areas Program, or CNAP, is a program within Colorado Parks and Wildlife focusing on the recognition and protection of areas that contain at least one unique or high-quality natural feature of statewide significance. These include places with rare plants and animals, unique plant communities, fossil-rich locations, and special geological features. The boundary is an extremely important geological feature, explains Raquel Wurzberg, a CNAP program coordinator. The site was identified by geologists in the 1980s, along with several other sites around Trinidad and into northern New Mexico. It was the first non-marine site of the boundary discovered, according to the CNAP website, and played a vital role in our early understanding of the asteroid and subsequent extinctions, and it continues to be an important scientific site today. The 180-acre natural area was designated within the state park in 2004. CNAP recently selected a volunteer with a paleontology background to monitor the site. On the CNAP website, we have a page on sites that can be visited by the public, and the KPG boundary is one of them, says Wurzbach. Due to the high sensitivity of the exposure of that natural feature, we don't want people harming it, but access and management are determined by the park. Though visitation to that side of the park is much lower than around the reservoir and campground, the boundary is important to the state park, says Floyd Duran, park manager. It creates variety for the park. Most people think Trinidad Lake is just boating and fishing, but we have a good variety of other recreation like hiking and birdwatching. Once visitors have discovered the KPG boundary, they often get interested in doing more research on it. They skim the surface here and then want to learn more, especially for kids. It's one of those areas that when people come in and ask us what's there to do here that's not fishing or hiking, we give them that site as an opportunity. It's kind of a quiet area without a lot of activity. It's not noisy and busy, and they can get back there and have a leisurely hike. And it's a very good birding back there as well. A lot of people arrive already knowing about the boundary and are excited to see it. Just the fact of it being around about dinosaurs draws visitors, says Durand. They come in and say, "We want to see where the dinosaurs went extinct." The interpretive sign was put up in the 1990s and has been changed a few times because of damage from the intense sun. "We're hoping to get that done this year," explains Durand. In the summer, the park occasionally leads interpretive hikes to the boundary, depending upon staffing. Best hiking in summer is in the early morning, so if there is an interpretive ranger available, we'll try to do some hikes. Local high schools sometimes visit for nature-oriented hikes. Often, the boundary piques their interest. As soon as they hear dinosaurs, they're interested. Some college geology groups visit on field trips, but they don't want guided hikes. A few documentaries have even been filmed back there. Sometimes we get requests to sample the boundary, but we are very hesitant on that because too much could really degrade the site. Does the park discourage people scrambling up the debris pile to get up to see the boundary? We don't have anything posted about staying off the slope, and I wouldn't want to see a fence there because it takes away from it being a natural area, says Duran. People aren't allowed to take anything from the park except fish, and we ask them not to climb, both for the safety aspect and the natural aspect. You never know when one of those big chunks of sandstone could come down. There's a big chunk that tumbled down around 2007 or 2008, and it's the size of a small car. In older books, articles, signs, maps, and websites, including for the Colorado Parks and Wildlife, you'll often see references to the KT boundary. This is an old term for this geologic layer. T refers to the tertiary period, an outdated term no longer recognized by the International Union of Geological Sciences. The old tertiary period is now broken into smaller time periods, Paleogene and Neogene. Though tertiary is no longer officially on the geologic time scale, it isn't going quietly into retirement and is in still broad popular use. Whether KPG or KT, the alphabet soup term deserves an explanation. On the geological timescale, the KPG boundary marks the transition between the Cretaceous period, the last period of the Mesozoic era, and the Paleogene, which is the first period of the Cenozoic era. KPG is geological shorthand for the Cretaceous-Paleogene boundary. PG is an obvious abbreviation for Paleogene, but why is K an abbreviation for Cretaceous? Why not C? Quick answer. C was already taken. The geology community uses C as shorthand for the Cambrian period, a very old geologic period dating to 500 million years ago. So did they choose K as a shorthand for Cretaceous because it sounds like C? No. But the rationale is a little confusing. The term Cretaceous derives from Creta, Latin for chalk. K refers to cretide, the German word for chalk, so it makes perfect sense. Sort of. Regardless of what we call it, the important point is that the boundary is a marker between a world dominated by dinos and one eventually dominated by mammals. The world that existed before the KPG boundary and the Colorado that was on the day the asteroid hit are both so long ago that it's beyond our mind's ability to truly grasp. We imagine the world of the dinosaurs as an artist's rendering, its animals roaring animatronics at a dino park or reconstructed skeletons posed in museums. Though it was vastly different than our Colorado, it was a real world, a lush and vibrant world populated by complex life forms. The grazing hadrosaurs and hunting T-Rexes and soaring pedactodons that lived there were as real as the elk and bear and the circling ravens of Colorado today. Ultimately, the story of that long-ago Colorado and the demise of the dinosaurs is told not in words, but in the minerals of the KPG boundary. It's a story of a time when amazing life forms walked the land and how a sudden cataclysm of astounding power wiped out almost all of them, and it's waiting for you at a Colorado state park. There's an article by Sue Emond, Expect the Unexpected in Colorado State Parks. Truth be told, there's nothing I'd rather do than explore the great outdoors of Colorado, and Colorado State Parks are often the destination. To date, I visited 26 of Colorado's 43 state parks. Well, not just visited. I've hiked, jogged, camped, kayaked, float-tubed, fished, photographed, swum, picnicked, and more. Whether I'm venturing to a state park for the first time or visiting one of my favorites, I'm always prepared with park information and trail maps that will help me make the most of my visit. And to be sure, I go in educated about the wildlife, birds, and wildflowers commonly found in each park, especially important to my passion for wildlife and nature photography. My preparations lead to certain expectations about what I might experience during each visit. But here's the thing. Regardless of my expectations, time and time again, I'm happily surprised by what I uncover. Here are a few of those memorable experiences. Jackson Lake State Park. I had just purchased an A-frame pop-up camper, a weekend destination not far from my Fort Collins home. Jackson Lake was the perfect place for a trial run. I also had plans, as always, to explore park trails, plus to fish and photograph waterfowl and other birds. And with the lake just east of my campsite and clear weather ahead, I look forward to being greeted each morning by sunrises over the lake. After getting settled in, I forged ahead with my plans for adventure. Telephoto lens in hand, I was scanning the big cottonwoods at the edge of the lake for birds when I spotted something slithering in the grass in front of me. A new find for me and a beautiful one, a North American racer. Also known as the yellow-bellied racer, the North American racer is a fast-moving snake that grows up to 3 feet long. Although a new reptile sighting for me, they're apparently common in eastern Colorado and less common in the valleys and canyons of western Colorado. State Forest State Park. I was determined to find bull moose before they shed their antlers for the season. So one frigid December morning before dawn, I headed up the Poudre Canyon and over Cameron Pass for a day trip to my favorite of state parks. With the temperature below 5 degrees below zero, I decided a wildlife drive around the park with a thermos of hot coffee in my heated SUV was in order. Although some of the roads were closed for the winter, I still had plenty of ground to cover and a frequent view of the majestic Medicine Bow Mountains, but I failed to scare up a moose. Instead, I came upon the most beautiful red fox that I have ever seen in my life. I bundled up and photographed the fox hunting in the snow for over an hour. It was truly an exhilarating experience, frozen fingers and all. Trinidad Lake State Park. I was itching to explore some of the state parks that I had never visited before. So, with A-frame camper in tow, I embarked on a 10-day tour of 4 state parks in southern Colorado in late spring. All featured scenic lakes that are popular fishing destinations, so I made it my goal to get my kayak out on each of them and to land at least one fish in each lake. After enjoying my first stop at John Martin Reservoir State Park, I moved on to the fishing, wildlife viewing, and hiking of Trinidad. I was especially anxious to hit the miles of trails winding through the pinyon juniper forest with spectacular views of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. Just after arriving at my campsite at the times on my family's Livermore property near the Cherokee State Wildlife Area Lone Pie Unit, in fact, a few years ago, one of my dogs was bitten several times by a rattlesnake while we were hiking on the property. I'm happy to report that Ruff survived, barely, after I rushed my unconscious pooch to the CSU Vet Hospital for antivenom. Well, that's all the time we have this week for the Colorado Outdoors. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Colorado Outdoors, read by Philip Bradbury.